Hi, I'm Matt Trussell, Managing Director of Go Big Digital. Welcome to the Rogue Monkey Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Rogue Monkey Podcast and episode 98. My name is Kevin, and I host the show where we share inspiring stories and dive into the lived experiences of others to help you on your journey. Today, I'm joined by Matt Trussell, MD at Go Big Digital. For the eagle-eyed amongst you, you'll recognise Matt from more than 50 episodes ago. We recorded with Matt in 2021 as he spoke to us about his mental health journey, having had some very traumatic experiences on the front line in Afghanistan as a Royal Engineer. Today we pick up the conversation 3 years on and talk about how Matt has taken many of the lessons learned along the way and allowed himself to thrive both as a business leader and as a person. Matt is a keen rugby player, a great guy to be around, and a gentle giant. And there are some fascinating reflections that he shares with us. So I hope you take as much away from this conversation as I did. Just a quick reminder to hit subscribe to the show, however you're joining us today, and that one click really does help the show to grow. So let's get into it, and episode 98, where I'm in conversation with Army veteran and business leader, Matt Trussell.
Matt, hello, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Kev. How are you?
Yeah, buzzing. It's been a long time coming. We were chatting about before we went on air how it was nearly 2.5, coming up 3 years ago that we recorded our last episode. So viewers and listeners out there, head back to episode 39. We actually had a double person episode. We had yourself and a mutual friend, James, joining us talking about mental health. And we're back today to explore it, I guess, from a business point of view. So for those of us that haven't seen the episode or listened to the last show, do you want to give our viewers and listeners just a bit of an intro as to who you are and a bit about your journey?
Sure, yeah. So I'm Matt Trussell, Managing Director of Go Big Digital. And I previously worked in the armed forces from the age of about 17. And I was in there between 17 to 23 years old. I served in the Royal Engineers and I did a tour of Afghanistan as a counter-IED searcher, which was quite literally explosive. So that's the reason why we did the initial podcast. I thought, you know, I've been through some pretty traumatic experiences and it was quite cathartic to just talk about them and help kind of uncover exactly what was going on and share those experiences with others to ultimately try and help them and support anyone else that might be suffering. So I did a podcast with James Boogie Bull, as he's known. Who's in the fire service, and obviously I hadn't really spoken to him much before, but through our discussions I identified that we'd been facing similar struggles, and you know, through actually talking about them and expressing it in a little bit more detail, as I say, it was quite cathartic because it helped me unravel them a little bit. And I think looking back at the things I was talking about, it's identified another kind of few small areas of improvement to help manage and improve my mental health better. And I guess since then, I've been on a bit more of a journey as well. I've tried various different things, and that's why I thought it'd be worth us talking again and just reflecting a little bit.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you mentioned there around the fact that it's little things, that it's an ongoing journey. It's little steps where you find new things, and spent a bit of time around James since we recorded, and we talk about it quite openly again. And I think that healthy conversation around being comfortable exploring what is an uncomfortable subject for a lot of people, but also trying out new ways of coping with it and the way in which it goes into different areas of your life. And again, I know we were talking about it before we started recording, how the different aspects of your life can actually impact on this. And I guess today we'll start by talking about it from a work point of view. So do you just want to give us, a little bit of an overview about Go Big Digital and the concept behind it, but also your journey up to this point with it?
Yeah, so Go Big Digital is a digital marketing agency that, and we predominantly focus on search engine optimization, so getting people to the top of Google. This wasn't really by mistake. So when I first started up the agency, you know, you would say yes to everything. Yeah, we do all of that. Digital marketing, yes, we do absolutely everything. But we didn't really have an area of specialization and we didn't really know what we're good at. But over the first sort of few years, I identified that there weren't many agencies that did search engine optimization very well. Certainly, if they did, that it was probably being outsourced elsewhere. and not really being done to a very high quality. So we naturally leaned into that and we started making investments in it. And pretty much since then, over the last 2 or 3 years in particular, the company's grown quite well and we're supporting a good number of clients locally. And I'm really quite passionate about making sure that people get a return on investment. So I'll only work with businesses where I feel like they can get that return on investment. So that is where we're at the moment.
I think there's an interesting bit in there because we just talked about return on investment.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that you see, whether it's the latest training fad or whether it's this new idea on phones or whether it's a new yoga practice or whatever it is, but we're always making, I guess, value judgments based on what is my return on investment. Like, if I'm going to give up my time or spend some money on something, am I going to get a return on it? And as a business leader and a founder, you always have limited amount of time, you know, especially as being a parent as well. You know, you get your time pulled in lots of different directions and you're making a judgment call as to going, is that going to be a return on my investment? Mm. So when you've kind of had to navigate some of the, I guess, challenges that come through being a business person, how do you prioritize what you are and are not going to invest your time in?
I think I've always had a bit of an intuition around what I think is going to work. And I have been proven wrong quite a lot, don't get me wrong. But generally, my hunch and my assessments are what keep me driving forward and making decisions. So I really don't know where it stemmed from. I think it probably came from being in the forces, potentially having to make these split second decisions and make assessments based on that. It is perhaps a little bit closed minded of me, but the times when I have properly explored things, for example, at university, going to a lecture when in my head it would be they're basically just going to read off of PowerPoint, sometimes that was proven right. So I guess it's just kind of made me be a bit old-fashioned and sticking to what I think I know rather than broadening my horizons in that sense. But that is a tough one. I think it is just that intuition piece. And, you know, running a business, you have to make split-second decisions as well a lot of the time. Not quite as dramatic as the life and death of the forces sometimes. But it is still quite important. So will a client get a return from this? And I guess I put myself in their shoes and I go, you know, if that was me spending a few thousand pounds a month of my own money, what would I expect and want from that? Additionally, it's probably coming from market research and awareness. So for example, we do social media management for clients, but I kind of think that social media is better for brand awareness and it won't always bring that quick return on investment. So I make people quite clear on the fact that actually the services that I'm recommending are most likely to bring in new work quicker, and that's based on lived experiences, research and everything else.
So it's an interesting point there. So if we look at that around quick decision making but also the experience piece, so a couple of interesting people, if you look in the sports space, would be someone like Sir Alex Ferguson, speaks quite openly around how he would spend 6 seconds or less on a decision. He said, because I'm never going to have 100% of the information that I need to know it's going to 100% pan out. Mm. But if I spend longer than 6 seconds, the amount of decisions I have to make a day, cumulatively, it's a waste of time. And then I was listening to a former president's book from America recently, again, talking about the fact that if it's a guaranteed decision, it would never land on their desk because someone would have already made the decision. And the closer you get to that 50-50, will it work out, will it not work out, that's where you have to make a judgment call based on your experience. Mm. So I think there's huge transfer there between different aspects of your life. So obviously, you're going to have things that pan out and don't pan out. And there's, especially when you've got an organization where you're a small, tight-knit team, if it doesn't go well, cumulatively time after time, does that start to wear on your mind, and do you feel like it affects your confidence? How does that whole process pan out of making judgment calls that perhaps don't pan out?
So I think hindsight is a wonderful thing, but you often don't have that. And I actually heard something along the lines of the worst decision you can make is actually making no decision at all. So the longer you dwell on things, that's more time that you're not spending on actually doing things. And almost every little thing that you do, even if it turns out not to have been the best decision, is progress, and you do learn and grow from that. So I'm quite bold in my decision making, and I do generally try and make decisions quite quickly, because I'm someone that hates waiting around, and I hate feeling like I'm not doing anything. And I suppose part of my previous struggles, and kind of obviously the way that I've struggled with my mental health, has been that the long-term thinking isn't there, and neither is the short-term, the mid-term. It's more like short-term, quick release, that quick gratification piece that comes in. So I think I am always focusing more on the short-term things. I do try and bring in longer-term goals and work towards them, because ultimately that's really the only way to run a business and not feel like you're treading water. And it's terrible for your well-being to just feel like you're treading water and going nowhere. So I basically see it as a load of different decisions that are ultimately going to end towards that goal of a growing business, and crucially supporting other people as well. So we do employ people and invest in people, and I want to be able to make a difference to their lives and help them grow, and equally, supporting the community as well. So we sponsor local rugby clubs and invest in them. So all of that is part of what I want to achieve, which is actually making a difference to more people, because I think businesses have that ability to be a force for good. And if you're not making decisions and you're not going anywhere with that, and you're trying to overanalyze, for example, I could go, sponsoring this sports club, what return is it going to bring to me? And I just go, no, gut feel is it's a good thing to do. I'm going to make that decision, and I'm going to help support that club. If it comes back to us in a business sense, good, but it's more the feel-good factor with stuff like that.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting, because what you've effectively talked about there is this kind of your values around what you actually feel as a person is the right thing to do, whether that's in the business sense, sports sense, and whatever it is. And I think perhaps we can almost have paralysis by analysis, where we get so caught up in what am I going to get back for this? What is this? Instead of actually trusting. Yes, like you said, hindsight is a wonderful thing. But most of the time, hindsight is looking back upon a range of decisions, good and bad, that have allowed us to get to that point and then pull on a skill set. So I think there's an interesting piece there around actually your values as a person. The second thing, you talked about sport there for a second, and I think that's something for me when I'm looking at the way people, I think, can manage their mental health and well-being better is the short, medium and long-term piece. We do it in sport all the time, even with younger athletes, you say to them, what's your short-term goal? What are you going to do this month? What's your long-term goal? What do you want to achieve in 10 years' time? And actually, as a business, to be able to have that kind of mindset of the decision I now or make now every day for the next 365 days is going to affect where I am in a year. But also the decision I make now is going to affect today, in terms of my mood, in terms of the way my day's structured, in terms of whether I work well or not so well with that client. So what framework do you have in place, or what different things do you have in place to try and have one eye on now, but also one eye on 6 months, a year, 2 years time as a business?
As a business, I think it's all marked in setting the overarching goals of the business. So I track everything quite well now, because we have good accountants in place that provide all of the financial analysis of where we are, where we're going. I employ a part-time sales director who can help structure the business and kind of drive some of that. I have an accountability coach who dresses up as a Viking, and he's called the Accountability Viking. He's called Ben, and he's really helped, because ultimately he's helping improve my productivity and my focus, because these are things that I do struggle with quite a lot, as I've been open about. And by kind of constantly trying to find ways to improve, for example, something simple like using Trello a habit. There is the journaling piece, which helps. That's more of a personal thing, but professionally it helps as well, because I'm trying to reframe negative experiences and make them positive, which overall helps kind of the sense of satisfaction in a day. There is a piece around, lost my train of thought there, which does happen when you have strokes with your mental health. What is the other?
Well, we've covered there, you've talked around the people around you.
Yeah.
In terms of the professionally employed people. You've talked around the accountability coach as well as your employees within the business. We talked around the journaling aspect, the kind of declutter. Is there an aspect of fitness that fits around it?
Yeah, so there's the other thing I was going to say is deadlines. So agreeing deadlines with clients, which is really important because, you know, deadlines can be based on anything. But if you don't set one, then you're almost leaving it open-ended, and that's no way to really progress. That does bring you back to the treading water piece. But this, another piece of structure does come from outside of the business side of things, which is, for me, it's based around sort of rugby. So training on a Tuesday evening, Thursday evening, routinely, taking away the excuses. So when it's cold, I know I'd rather be sitting on the sofa. But by going to rugby, I'm actually holding myself to account, being accountable, which feeds into the whole performance on a Saturday when, you know, when it's fun, ultimately. Then you've got the league structure there, and I really care about how the team's doing in the league. I want to read the match reports. I want to see the pictures, the videos and stuff like that. So having something outside of work to keep you driving forward is so important. Equally, booking holidays. So having something to look forward to always, rather than just, you know, otherwise you're just going, what am I waiting for now? I'm waiting for June when it's probably going to be warm and there's literally nothing else attributed to it. So having things in the diary ahead of time really does kind of keep you going forward as well.
There's quite a few things in there, and then we'll make sure we list those as kind of action points in the show notes, because I think they're the kind of things that people, when they're watching podcasts or they're listening to audiobooks or other kind of consumable ways of self-help, what is the actual outcomes we're looking for? And I think there's a really interesting piece there. You know, fortunate enough in my day job to work around professional athletes, and I look at how we can effectively periodize a year, but with a four-year goal in mind, but we can track that all the way down to today. You know, so what in our syllabus of things needs to be put into this year? When are the allocated rest periods, our holidays, for example, in personal life? When is the time for us to focus solely on this? What are our goals? What are our deadlines? What are our markers as to whether we're on track or off track? And I guess there's some really interesting things there for people to consider, because you mentioned deadlines and how it's just open-ended if you don't have them. But how many people apply that to various aspects of their life? You know, I don't know about you, but I certainly have every week, I'll have three or four things each day that get ticked off. And they might be very simple things. Take the bin out, you know, hang the washing up, whatever it is. But actually by having that mentality of kind of a little step forward every single day and ticking things off, it gives you that momentum. And especially working in kind of a digital role, you've got that opportunity to effectively build momentum across a year. It's not seasonal. So how do you kind of, in your experience, keep that momentum up when it's hard? We talked earlier about how it's easy to do when it's easy, but how do you keep things moving forwards, and how, when it is freezing cold, you know, when you don't want to go training, when you've had a client say no, or when you've had a deadline pushed back, how do you navigate that part of the journey?
So for me, I listen to a lot of audiobooks and sort of podcasts and stuff like that. And most of them have been around self-help and productivity, because I think you have to continuously do that to help you overcome challenges and learn. And one of the things that really stuck with me was actually that motivation is something that you create. If you wait for it, it will never come to you. And you do that through actually input into activities. And you have to kind of go, do you know what? I'm going to keep doing this thing at this time, and basically forming habits. And it's like, as an example, if you want to eat more fruit, you know, I'm not going to talk about the order of it, but when you brush your teeth, have an apple and so on, and just stack habits and you keep at them. And then you start associating this thing that you're doing with that certain time of day or the other activities that you are going to be doing every day. And by doing that, actually, you keep at it. And if you miss something once, you probably will notice it. If you miss it twice, obviously, then that starts slipping away. So you have to just keep at it, keep it consistent, and keep showing up. And ultimately, if you then assess it over a period of time, you should start noticing the benefits of doing so. I know if it's cold and miserable and I sit at home, I'm going to get much less value from that than I am going out, going for a run, having that social interaction with people, because I know that all of this stuff is positive for well-being. And I know that the thing wanting me to stay inside is that primitive part of the brain that's trying to protect me from the threats of the world. But ultimately, that is going to make me feel worse as a result. So it's just knowing what's good for you. It's knowing that if I put the bin out on a Thursday night, I don't have to do it on a Friday morning. Little things like that, and just paying things forward and kind of helping your future self. So put the hard work in now and you will thank yourself for it later. You can be pretty sure if you don't do the stuff now, no matter how hard it is, that you won't be thanking yourself later on down the road and you will regret it.
It's almost like the way we look after our cars, you know, in the sense of we don't wait for them to break down. You know, we service them regularly and we make sure if we see something that's amiss with them, we get it checked out. Whereas I think, and I can only speak from a guy's point of view here, but I do think as men, very often, we can see little signs, the chip in the windshield, if you like, of our mental health, but just brush it off and just keep ploughing on. Or you have, like we're in a period now where it is cold, you know, and you have that for 2 weeks. Does that mean you're not going to go training for 2 weeks? You know, and that kind of kicking the can down the road. And I loved what you said there around helping your future self. I think too often we live in a very instant gratification sort of world where, like you said, the primitive part of your brain says, it's cold, stay at home, you'll feel better for being warm. Yeah, you will for an hour, but you're still going to be warm when you come home from training, have a shower and freshen up, except you're going to have that endorphin feeling of, oh, I've just done that for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. So one of the things I want to dive into a little bit is that you've obviously got people around you, friends, family, colleagues, and actually how do you make sure that they're buying into that kind of, not necessarily that mentality, because everyone has their own mentality, but some of the, if you like, supporting you in terms of your future self, the people around you, how does that all kind of, what does that interaction look like, and how do you get people on board with these kind of things you're talking about?
So I guess I'm just quite open and honest with having these conversations with people. So as an example, I've got an apprentice on board in the business. And the whole idea of this is around future growth and investing in the future. The person, my apprentice, she's called Isla. And actually, at 16 years old, she was going around businesses in the area and dropping off CVs. And I thought, that's pretty impressive and quite bold, going to professional businesses and knocking on the door, effectively, and handing out CVs. So I try and put myself in their shoes and I say, you know, what would I have benefited from someone telling me to do or advising me to do that's going to help benefit me in the future? So I just talk about the story. I say, you know, the reason why you're doing this piece of work and the reason why I've asked you to do this is because in 3 to 6 months' time, you'll then be able to do this, which is of value to employers, isn't it? And it would help your career in this way or that way. So that's it in the professional sense. In the personal sense, so as an example, every morning I'll go on the Headspace app and do 15 minutes of meditation. Obviously, I've got a little son, so that means he's probably going to be downstairs at the time because I'm not getting up at 6 a.m., you know. I'm probably getting up at 7 at best. And so I explained to my wife that actually the reason I'm doing that is because it will help lessen my feelings of anxiety and stress, which will be beneficial for not just me, but more importantly, everyone else, because I'm not then going to be stressy. I'm going to be a bit more relaxed in how I am, and I'm going to be a better husband, better father. And I think it is just that honest communication. I will put out things on like LinkedIn and Facebook around sort of well-being and things that every so often I'll put a status out about supporting other people and tips for supporting yourself. For example, I just knew that people would be anxious coming back after Christmas and the new year and coming into work in January after that time off. And I just put some tips out around kind of how you can manage that time, how you can be kinder to yourself, and how you can sort of try and improve the return to work, for example, by planning things in advance while you're still off. And I think it is quite tough for a lot of people out there particularly after the pandemic, and actually, you know, spending all that time at home and then having to go into the office where they may feel trapped. Like, I know when I was kind of in my first jobs after uni, and that big massive challenge with depression and anxiety, going into an office made me feel really trapped. Like, I had to be chained to my desk until exactly the end of the day. And then I had to think of a reason why I was leaving on time. So I'm quite open in saying, you know, for example, if you've got an appointment that you need to make personally, make it. You can work later if you need to. So I'm just really conscious of it, because it's all from my own personal experience. And I just know that I have a lot of power in kind of my ability to support other people for the better. And what I don't want is anyone working with me or near me to feel trapped and that I've got a negative kind of benefit on, negative effect on them. Mm-hmm. I want to make a positive impact on people. And I've also learned a lot around, actually, there's a lot of value in being a bit more compassionate. And I'm listening to a 25-hour audiobook at the minute on compassion. And that's the missing piece of the puzzle, really, in terms of our own well-being, that actually we look inside ourselves. But the day that you actually start focusing on other people more and making them happier is a day that you'll potentially be happier and in a better place yourself.
That's really interesting. Again, what's the name of the book?
I think it's called The Compassionate Mind or something like that.
We'll grab that and we'll make sure we link that in the notes. There's one thing I picked up there is you talked about the use of power. And I think that there's some negative connotations with that word, and people can think, oh, well, the word power is viewed as something authoritarian and people are in charge and those sorts of things. But what a being in a position of power actually does is it gives you the ability to make a choice. You can choose to be negative with that, but actually people in leadership positions that empower others, that give them the flexibility, that have these honest conversations with them, that look at their future self in terms of the people they're working with, they're actually using power for good. And I think it's more around not the word use of power, it's actually abuse of power, and not actually applying it, like you said, in a compassionate way. So I really like that. How do you, you know, no one's perfect. So this is a journey for you and for everyone else out there. So how do you catch yourself? How do you start seeing cracks emerge? How do you get to a point where you feel like perhaps that wasn't the best decision today? You know, how do you reflect on those sorts of things?
So for me, it's a lot around the daily routine and the habits that I've tried to form. So I have done cognitive behavioral therapy twice, EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And I've done hypnotherapy in two forms to try and make myself feel better. And it's been a pretty much a 10-year journey of struggling. And it's only really over the last 6 months, a year, where I've found something that's been most helpful. And that was through, so I did solutions-focused hypnotherapy. And what the Ian Merton, the hypnotherapist, introduced was actually journaling. So write down three positive things at the end of each day. So to actually make your mind think you have had positive experiences, when I would always be focusing on the negatives. And the only time I'd speak as if it was something negative I had to say, I wouldn't really be full of praise. Every time someone said something, I'd get, if it was like, oh, do you want to go and do this week? I'd get really anxious straight away, and it wouldn't be a positive thing. So by doing that, I was reframing my mind. And the days I didn't do it, I thought, oh, I've not done it. And I felt bad about it. So, and I knew that it was something that's going to benefit me. So that's one thing that I was doing. And then I would do the meditation piece. So listening to an audio file, which was a guided meditation or guided relaxation. So listening to that, the theory was that actually, and it empties your stress bucket, because throughout the day, your stress bucket fills. And then you get to the end of the day, and then your mind's racing, you're anxious, you probably sit on the sofa, as I say, you eat junk food, you do all of these things. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I do like my food and I do have the binges quite often, but I try and counteract that with rugby and stuff like that. But the last piece of that puzzle for me that is missing and has been missing and I've recently identified is actually that I'm still in that cycle of negativity. And it could be things like taking the mick out of people all the time, or, you know, saying, look at that idiot on TV or something like that. And that isn't a good way to be. I know that. And I have, over the last few weeks, found myself in that situation. And that's why I've been listening to this book about compassion. And ultimately, if I don't catch myself, my wife is very honest. She will tell me, which is one thing that's really good for me. But I had kind of identified it anyway, and I feel like I don't want to be that way. So I guess I just catch myself now going, do you know what? I've just thought something negative. So I try and instantly reframe that into something positive. And I think it's only through that, having that meditation and that time to reflect and maybe going on a walk or something like that, and having the, as an example, in rugby on a Saturday, I've got a pretty good idea whether I was good or bad, and I'm quite honest with it. But it's by having that conversation with the coach that I actually get that feedback, and I know that whether I was good or bad, and I'm honest with them and I say, sorry, you know I was rubbish today, and they'll go, don't worry about it, you did some good stuff, these things happen. So you just have to be really in and try and tune in on yourself and have discussions with people and to really catch these things when they happen.
You mentioned there around your coach, and you also mentioned earlier around the accountability coach as well. And I think, again, an interesting role that coaches play in different settings, whether that's in the personal sense, the sporting sense, or in a business sense. So for, and I know we've got quite a lot of coaches that watch this and engage with the pod. So what advice, especially having, I guess, explored it today in a number of fields, do you have for anyone who works in a coaching or a leadership role out there in terms of the way that they can communicate with people, the piece around compassion, and the piece around support? Because very often the things that perhaps we see as a coach might not be the full picture.
So I think for coaches, they have incredible power over people that are in some way or another really enthused and passionate about the sport they play or engage with. And ultimately, whether it could be habitual for them, so they're just that used to it that they have to do it, and they feel like they don't want to miss it and they want to do it in that sense, or they just love it so much that they're doing it. But the coach is literally the kind of gatekeeper. So in rugby, for example, most clubs have a first team, second team, third team, and so on. And I think it's fair to say that you've got players that want to be in the first team. That's all they want to do, and that's why they turn up, and that's why they train and work hard. And they're sacrificing everything and anything to get to training and to play on a Saturday because they want to compete at the highest level they can. Second team, you've probably got a mixture. You've got people that just want to turn up 5 minutes before, do a stretch, play rugby, have beers after. And then you've got some people that aspire to be in the first team, but either there's people in the first team in their position that are pretty much nailed on because they've been there a long time and they're really good players. Or maybe they're just new to the game and they haven't quite got it yet and they're not quite ready. And I think there's a lot of people that probably come through the cult system where there's that bridge, and the coach has to manage expectations of those new younger players, because to put someone into the first team straight away, I'm not saying I'm playing at professional level by any standard, but level 7 rugby, to bring a person as literally 17, 18 into the first team straight away isn't really managing expectations very well. And it's not fair on the people in the second team that are working hard. And it may make them feel, as a result, if they play one or two games and then they're in the second team, that they're a failure for whatever reason. So I think coaches just need to be really open, honest communicators with people, and they have to identify and really catch themselves with what they're saying. So obviously with rugby, you could have 20, 30 people at training. So you're talking to the group, but do give individual feedback as well. And don't just have the excuse, there's too many people here, I can't say anything, I don't have a chance. You can say something very small to people. And if you can't in the session, message them after. What they're really good at well in rugby club, for example, is one of the coaches would message pretty much every single player with a bit of feedback after the game and say, you did this well, you could probably improve on that. And, you know, I'm not saying you have to completely appease everyone, but ultimately, if someone, for whatever reason, isn't going to make it into the first team and that's what they want to do, give them an honest reason why. Don't just kind of say to them, you know, oh, just keep training, that's it, and don't tell them nothing. Because ultimately, you know, you could go through the whole week wondering, am I going to be playing first team rugby, which is something I really care about. And if you're not in there, you don't know why, it's quite disheartening. And if that's your passion and, you know, the hobby and the thing that you want to do, that eats up a lot of your time, effort and energy, and you're never going to improve and you're never going to know where you stand. So it's just, and also it's around spotting those little things. So for example, someone might not be playing very well because they might be in the wrong position, but if you've never spoken to them, that you've never know that. They might have struggles going on in their personal life that are impacting their performance that you can support with. So, I mean, most coaches are almost like father figures in a way, whether they or you know, mothers as well, but without even realising it, potentially. So they have that ability to actually kind of really bring people up rather than just... Because coaches do it for the passion as well. I mean, a lot of them might be going through their own struggles and stuff like that, but they almost have to, so similar to players, kind of try and park that a bit and really give it their all in those sessions and to that role.
That's really interesting. You mentioned there around the understanding that there is more than just what's going on the pitch and understanding the individuals as to what their goals and aspirations are. You know, for anyone who works within a team, it doesn't matter what setting, whether that's a sport team, a work team, your educational setting, understanding who is in your team, you know, and actually having conversations with people. Because very often, my day job, I get the chance to speak to a lot of coaches. And when you actually understand all of their personal journeys, what they've got going on, all those sorts of things, you go, how do you find time to give up 2, 3, 4 hours a week to do this? And, you know, for a lot of them, they do it voluntary. And they go, I just love it. And actually, I think there's a lot of people, if you speak to in any setting, team-wise, they love what they do. Mm. They're passionate about the business they work for, the school that they're studying in, the sports team that they're playing for. And actually, if as a coach, as a leader, as a manager, if you can tap into that and understand that and show empathy and compassion, what you tend to do is get better out of that person in terms of what they are delivering. But more importantly, that person has a better experience. Very often you hear that a lot, and you talked about the benefit of hindsight. How many people in their 30s, 40s, 50s can recount a sporting, a school, an early work experience when they were in their teenage years that had a massive impact on them? And it might have just been a sentence, and there might not even be something malicious about it. It's just something that has stuck with them. And I think that there's a real piece to look into there. So some great tips for people to take away. There's one thing I want to talk about, just to kind of pull all of this together. You talked about the benefit of hindsight. And when I interviewed both you and James a few years back, we talked about the lessons that you'd kind of taken so far and what your advice be to everyone out there. What I want you to do now, and I know I've thrown this on you a little bit, but looking back 3 years in terms of how far you've come personally and professionally and in your sporting sense, what advice would you have given now to yourself going back 3 years?
You have to look inside yourself and identify the values and things that are really important to you. And you have to live your life by them, because they are the driving force behind what you do. At the time, I look back and I feel like I was in a bit of a loop of sort of misery almost, where I thought, is it about the money? Is it this that's driving me in life? Is it that? And it was literally going month to month. But over the last sort of year or two, I've really thought about the values and what it is that actually drives me. And that gives me a great sense of purpose. So as much as it's rewarding kind of running the business and stuff, is actually helping other people and businesses, that is the most rewarding thing. And that is what I want to do. I want to help them grow. It's obviously wanting to be a good person and do well for my son and be a role model for him. It's supporting my family. It's having those values and understanding what you need to do to be the best version of yourself, which often is self-driven. So you can go and do professional therapy. You can go and do all of these things. But ultimately, it's the little things you could, I could have done myself that would be the most help, which is the old meditation, as I say, the journaling, all the little things, all the little habits that you form that are positive, going for a walk. If you catch yourself feeling miserable and your head's foggy, just stop, go out for a walk, have a think, like let yourself kind of exercise your mind a little bit more. Definitely though, it's that value thing where, and it's hard because if you're in like a normal job, a lot of that may feel out of your control. And I'm not suggesting everyone starts their own business, particularly if they're struggling, because then the struggles could become worse. Because, you know, you're floating around chasing clients, there's no structure to your time. So you have to create all of that yourself, and you probably don't realize how much worse that is as well for your well-being. But just looking inside and going, these are the values I want to live by, and actually doing it and investing in doing that and doing it as best as you can, probably what I feel is the most useful thing that I could have done. I probably couldn't have done it at the time, but hindsight, as you say, is a wonderful thing. So definitely I feel like those are the things that have got me to where I am now, which is probably the best place I've been in 10 years pretty much, which is obviously there's still a long road to go, but I feel like the habits I'm doing are helping the day-to-day and helping the long-term focus and the gratification and everything else.
That's amazing. And I would say that's a really nice way to pull it all together, but I have one more question to ask, because we will revisit this and I'm going to forecast, let's say 10 years time, what would Matt in 10 years time say to you right now?
Try to be more present in everything you're doing and stop thinking about other things. So just actually bring yourself into the here and now a lot more. From the little things to the big things, so whether it's just going for a coffee, whether it's having a conversation with someone in passing, whether it's being on holiday, and stop using your phone all the time and getting drawn into these chats and things that don't actually mean anything, that are eating up a lot of time sometimes.
Cool. That's a great way now to pull it all together. And I'm really grateful, because I think there's a lot of people who are either uncomfortable having these conversations, but have aspirations to start their own business or go off and even create a side job, or they're just in a leadership position in a normal 9-to-5 office job, but actually perhaps underestimate the ability that they've got to influence others in such a positive way. So I really appreciate you sharing some time with me today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Matt for another humbling conversation. On recording day, it was the first time I'd actually seen Matt for quite a while, and to hear how happy he is and how far he's come was absolutely amazing. You can connect with Matt via the links in the show notes, and I know he's always keen to hear from like-minded people and businesses, so please make sure you reach out. Make sure you've hit subscribe however you're joining us today. I hope you have a great week, and thanks again for being part of the Road Monkey Podcast community.